Israeli regime, which brutally kills dozens of innocent civilians over government offices in the Austrian capital, Vienna. And China says the U.S. is ignoring the sufferings of Muslims after Washington blocked a scheduled U.N. Security Council meeting on Israeli attacks against Palestinians. Hello, everyone. Israel is carrying out fresh airstrikes in the Gaza Strip for a fifth straight night, killing more civilians than besieged Palestinian territory. At least four people were killed after Israeli fighter jets pounded residential areas in Gaza City and Khan Yunis, destroying a mosque among other civilian buildings. Israeli Navy as well as artillery units deployed near Gaza also shelled the coastal strip. Palestinian Health Ministry says in Gaza at least 132 people, including more than 50 women and children, have been killed since Israel began its deadly offensive on Monday. Nearly 1,000 others have been wounded in the strikes. Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement has conducted retaliatory rocket strikes against Israel. Three people were injured in the latest such attack on Ashdod. And Palestinians laid to rest victims of Israel's deadly crackdown on protests across the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces have killed at least 14 Palestinians in occupied territory since Monday. This includes 11 people killed on Friday alone. Meanwhile, over 150 Palestinian protesters were also injured in Israel's crackdown. Palestinian Red Crescent says the Israeli forces have been targeting Palestinians with live rounds. A Palestinian security source said the protests are the most intense since the second Palestinian uprising, which began in 2000.
More Palestinians have been killed and hundreds others have been wounded in a fresh Israeli crackdown on the occupied West Bank. The crackdown came in several areas after Palestinians held rallies to denounce Israel's massacres in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Gaza is under bombing. All Palestinians must take part in the protests and go to the military checkpoints. If we stay at our homes, nothing will change. We must fight those Israeli occupying soldiers wherever they are.
We are all in one tunnel, all Palestinians who live in the lands that were occupied in 1948, in Al-Quds, in the West Bank, and in Gaza. We are today fighting, by different means, the Israeli occupation. Innocent people and children are being killed in cold blood. The least to do is to protest.
In occupied Ramallah, hundreds of Palestinians intensified their participation in the ongoing anti-Israel protests. Following Friday prayers, people from all walks of life and from different political affiliation marched toward the Beit El military checkpoint located outside the city. Palestinian activists taking part in the protest said the crimes and violence by the Israeli forces require a serious reaction.
Our battle is won. We are all today united in defense of Al-Quds. The Israeli occupation is the enemy of the Palestinian people, wherever they are. After all these years, the Palestinians in the land occupied in 1948 are sending a message to the occupying regime that nothing succeeded to let them forget their historical rights, change their culture and identity.
Israeli forces' violence has also seen a spike in the Palestinian cities occupied in 1948, like Lod, Akka, and Haifa, including attacks by Israeli settlers and destruction of Palestinian property and the burning of mosques, amid the Israeli regime's fears the conflict could even spread.
Protests against Israel's full-scale war on the besieged Gaza Strip have spiraled rapidly all over the occupied territories. Palestinians say a new uprising against Israel is in the making here in the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem. Al-Quds and definitely were reached to the lands occupied in 1948. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has condemned Austria for raising the Israeli flag over government offices in Vienna. Araghchi, in a tweet, called the measure shocking and painful. He noted that the regime has brutally killed dozens of innocent civilians, including many children, in just a few days. Araghchi also reiterated Iran's support for the Palestinian people. Earlier, Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz offered condolences to the Israeli regime, saying he ordered the hoisting of the Israeli flag over government offices in the capital. This comes against the backdrop of pro-Palestinian rallies held in Vienna earlier this week. The U.S. is being slammed for blocking a U.N. Security Council statement on the issue of Palestine. We discussed Washington's support for Israel earlier in our news review program. Here it is. China has slammed the U.S. for blocking a United Nations Security Council statement on Israeli attacks on Palestinians.
It's very regrettable that the U.S. exclusively opposed the publication of a press statement during the emergency consultations held by the Security Council on May 10th. In the second emergency consultation held on May 12th, almost all members of the Security Council supported making brief media comments on the Palestinian situation. However, the U.S. exclusively obstructed the Security Council from speaking out and once again stood on the opposite side of the international community.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said that Washington has ignored the sufferings of the Palestinian people. The U.S. also blocked a U.N. Security Council meeting on a matter scheduled for Friday. Washington said that the statement will prove unhelpful to de-escalate talks with Israeli and Palestinian sides. Security Council meeting is expected to be held Sunday. U.S., which is Israel's closest ally, has defended the regime's deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip and at the same time stressed that civilian casualties must stop. Joining us now for the program is Mr. E. Michael Jones, editor of Culture Wars Online magazine, joining us from, South Bend, Indiana, and Mr. Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist, joining us from Toronto, Canada. Gentlemen, I would like to welcome you both to the program here. We'll start there with you, Mr. E. Michael Jones. Your initial thoughts on the Chinese narrative on this said, hey, let's get this thing tabled and let's talk about it. It's an atrocity what's happening. Why is the U.S. not letting it happen?
Well, the United States is controlled by the Israel lobby, and that means there is no criticism whatsoever allowed of Israel, no matter what they do. Now, this is interesting here because the people who are doing this right now, this whole thing got started by the disciples of the late Rabbi Meir Kahan, who founded the Jewish Defense League. Now, Kahan was banned from the Knesset in 1988, and now his party is in a coalition with the Likud. So what you're seeing here is the total deterioration of any type of moral fabric in Israeli politics. They can do whatever they want. They're even bringing back people who they call terrorists. They're bringing that party back. This guy, it's Itamar Ben-Gvir, who is the head of this party. He's the third most popular speaker in Israel. And it shows you how the whole situation has moved in Israel from some type of moderation to complete endorsement of terrorism.
Thank you, Mr. E. Michael Jones. Mr. Eric Wahlberg, welcome to the program. Your initial thoughts on this.
It's a very depressing situation. I really can't say much to counter what Mike Jones is saying. And all I can say is we are demonstrating across North America tomorrow. There will be demonstrations at city halls in all the major cities. I'm going to one. And I noticed that there is much more sense of militant anger in confronting Israel. There is not a lot of that gets through the media, but a little bit does. And there are petitions every day demanding that Israel stop and that Palestinians' rights are somehow observed or at least noted.
Eric,
so that's happening, but it's not a very a good time.
But Eric, you know what it is? What gets me is that the U.S. doesn't even want the conversation to start. It's not, because we know very well if there's going to be a resolution, a condemnation, any kind of anything with teeth, the U.S. is going to use that veto like it always does. There's always a 120, in the General Assembly, there's always 120, 22 countries trying to do something to Israel. There's always that one veto from the U.S. that prevents them from doing it. In the Security Council, there's always two dozen countries. There's always the U.S. that always bails Israel out. But in this case, they're not even letting the conversation be tabled. Just a topic. Let's just talk about it. What are they afraid of? What are heads in Washington afraid of?
Biden did not want to be dealing with Palestine. It's very low on his priority. So he's just leaving Israel to do what it likes, and he basically quietly backs Israel and just hopes, he's praying that somehow this will all disappear. This it's very, very short-sighted politics on Biden's side, not to be able to take any position at all. All he says is Israel's security is vital. We must allow Israel to have its security. That's all he's saying over the past few days. It's appalling. And I mean, the anger among Palestinians is really pushing the Palestinian, pro-Palestinian movement in here and in Europe. So I just hope that we can make some breakthrough in mass demonstrations. That's about all that we can hope for. And it is encouraging that the BDS laws that in 30 states, there are laws basically saying you cannot criticize Israel. So,
but yeah, it equates, so somehow they say it equates to anti-Semitism, which is such a far reach. We got you on that. And the BDS, for our viewers that don't know, is a boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement where you refuse to buy anything that comes out of occupied territories made by Israeli entities. We don't have much time left. I want to let Mr. E. Michael Jones get the last word and go on, sir.
Yeah, I think the big picture here is that these people think that it's time to rebuild the temple. This is an attack on the mosque. The mosque is on the foundation of the temple. I think there's a kind of apocalyptic mood in Israel. No one stops them. They can do whatever they want. They are so powerful that they feel that they can act with impunity. And if you let them act with impunity, that's what they'll do. They'll rebuild the temple, and then they'll rule the entire world from Jerusalem.
Gentlemen, thank you both, and do stay safe. Thank you for both joining us on the program. Mr. E. Michael Jones, editor of Culture Wars Online magazine out of South Bend, Indiana, and Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist there, joining us from Toronto. That's a wrap to the segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. And welcome back, everyone. Now, a blast has ripped through a supply convoy of the U.S.-led military coalition in southern Iraq. An Iraqi security official said that a truck of the convoy carrying military equipment hit an explosive device en route to Nasiriyah. No casualties were reported in the blast. There's also no claim of responsibility for the incident. Attacks on U.S. assets have become more frequent recently amid growing anti-American sentiments. Anger toward the U.S. presence in the country heightened following Washington's assassination of top Iranian general and a senior Iraqi commander near Baghdad back in January of 2020. 12 people are killed, at least, in an explosion inside a mosque near the Afghan capital, Kabul. Blast happened as worshippers gathered for Friday prayers in Shahkardara district. Authorities said the mosque's imam was among the dead, while at least 15 others were injured. There is also no claim of responsibility for it. The blast comes amid a three-day ceasefire between the Afghan government and the Taliban, announced on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr holidays. A deadly violence has rocked the country in recent weeks after the U.S. formally began withdrawing its remaining troops from there. Nearly two decades of U.S. military presence in Afghanistan has failed to quell violence and ensure security in the country. Russia says it's officially listed the U.S. and the Czech Republic as unfriendly states. Moscow also announced that the U.S. diplomatic missions can no longer employ local staff, while Czech missions could employ a maximum of 19. Czech Foreign Ministry criticized the decision, saying it is at odds with an international agreement committing countries to enable orderly functioning of diplomatic missions. The ministry described Moscow's action as further escalation of the row between the two countries. Relations between Moscow and Prague soured last month after the Czech Republic accused Russian military intelligence of being behind a 2014 explosion and expelled dozens of Russian diplomats. Russia rejected the allegations and retaliated by expelling a number of Czech diplomats. India's COVID cases have jumped above 24 million as the country is struggling with another wave of infections. India's health ministry registered over 343,000 infections in the last 24 hours, along with their death rate rose by 4,000 during that same time period, pushing total fatalities to over 262,000. India has seen a sharp rise in infections in recent weeks, causing severe shortages of hospital beds and oxygen supplies. Surges partly blamed on a new strain, which the World Health Organization has classified as a variant of global concern. The Indian government has stepped up its vaccination program to try to curb the surge. However, the campaign faces major challenges, including limited supplies as well as rules varying from one state to the next. The British Prime Minister says the Indian variant of COVID-19 could prevent a planned reopening of the economy in the country.
This new variant could pose a serious disruption to our progress and could make it more difficult to move to step four in June. And I must stress that we will do whatever it takes to keep the public safe.
Still don't know about this new variant.
Boris Johnson said that the Indian variant is of significant concern for his government. New variant has been spotted in parts of northern England and London. This has led to calls to delay a planned reopening of the economy in June. Britain had a hard time trying to curb the coronavirus pandemic, which has killed over 128,000 people there. The country pushed one of the fastest inoculation campaigns on the planet after Boris Johnson came under fire last year for giving the virus ground to spread by delaying lockdowns. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. On the eve of a vote almost certain to remove her from a leadership role in the Republican Party, a defiant Liz Cheney embraced her fall from party grace and offered a final appeal to her colleagues. We must speak the truth. Liz Cheney delivered the speech in the House of Representatives on Tuesday, 11th of May. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Manvi Singh. The piece is titled, We Must Speak the Truth, Liz Cheney Defiant Ahead of Ouster from Top Republican Job. Stay with us for more of Manvi Singh's article. The eve of a vote almost certain to remove her from a leadership role in the Republican Party, a defiant Liz Cheney embraced her fall from party grace and offered a final appeal to her colleagues. We must speak the truth, she said. Liz Cheney delivered the speech in the House of Representatives on Tuesday, 11th of May. Republicans are poised to remove Cheney from her House leadership position over her refusal to support former President Donald Trump's big lie that last year's election was stolen from him. Liz Cheney, a Wyoming representative who hails from a Republican political dynasty, was one of 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump for incitement of insurrection following the deadly 6th of January attack on the Capitol. In the weeks since, her assertions that the 2020 elections were valid and that Donald J. Trump was wrong to stir up supporters who rioted in his name have driven a wedge between her and fellow Republicans who remained loyal to the former president. In a speech on the House floor on Tuesday evening, Liz Cheney was steadfast. She said, I will not sit back and watch in silence while others lead our party down a path that abandons the rule of law and joins the president's crusade to undermine our democracy. Wearing a pin replicating George Washington's battle flag, Liz Cheney justified her positions by referencing her time at the U.S. State Department, comparing the Capitol attack to events she's seen in authoritarian countries. A staunch lifelong conservative and the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, she is almost certain to be replaced on Wednesday as the number three House Republican by Elise Stefanik, a New York representative who holds more moderate views on most matters, barring the validity of the last presidential election. This is not about policy, this is not about partisanship, Liz Cheney said. This is about our duty as Americans. Critics have said that Cheney's appeal for a fair democracy sounds hypocritical, considering that she voted against the For the People Act to protect voting rights and against enfranchising Washington, D.C. residents. Liz Cheney's fate is a sign of Donald Trump's enduring grip on the Republican Party. Her ouster comes as Arizona Republicans carry through a sham audit of the votes in Maricopa County, Arizona, employing a firm called Cyber Ninjas to investigate conspiracy theories, including the false claim that ballots with traces of bamboo were smuggled in from Asia. As part of a swan song on the House floor, Liz Cheney referred to Donald Trump as a threat and reiterated, "The election is over. That is the rule of law." Meanwhile, the Republican senator from Iowa, Joni Ernst, has told reporters, "I feel it's okay to go ahead and express what you feel is right to express, and, you know, cancel culture is cancel culture, no matter how you look at it." The Republican senator from Iowa, Joni Ernst, added, "Unfortunately, I think there are those that are trying to silence others in the Republican Party." Cancel culture has become a shibboleth of the modern Republican Party, repeatedly invoked when public figures become embroiled in controversy regarding opinions or statements deemed to be racist, sexist, or otherwise unacceptable. On Monday, the trainer of the horse that won the Kentucky Derby but then returned a positive drugs test claimed to be a victim of cancel culture himself. Liz Cheney of Wyoming lost her number three leadership role in a close vote on Wednesday, and she was replaced by Elise Stefanik of New York. Cheney is a hardline conservative, but has rejected Donald Trump's lie that Joe Biden won the White House through mass electoral fraud. She was one of 10 House Republicans to vote for Donald Trump's impeachment over the Capitol riot on 6th of January. Elise Stefanik, meanwhile, voted against the impeachment. She also objected to electoral results from Pennsylvania, one of the states challenged by Republicans in service to Trump's lie. CNN, meanwhile, reported that Liz Cheney thinks the party is suffering from collective amnesia and fear of Donald Trump. Joni Ernst said she supported Donald Trump and his policies, but I still think we shouldn't be trying to cancel voices. What we can do is come together and try to win seats in 2022. I think that's what all of us should be focused on. Meanwhile, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has calculated that capitulating to Donald Trump, as has most of the Republican Party, is his best path to winning the House in the midterm elections next year. Thank you.
food for thought.
Salam, and since we're still basking in the blessings of Eid al-Fitr, following the end of the fasting month of Ramadan, here is food for thought from the Commander of the Faithful, the Imam of the Pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, the divinely designated vicegerent of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Indeed, the aid is for those whose fasting has been accepted by God and whose worship has been appreciated. And any day on which God has not been disobeyed is aid.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The British Prime Minister's silence on Israeli regime's latest assault against Palestinians in the occupied city and in the Gaza Strip is inexcusable, says Peter Oborn, writer, in an article titled Al-Aqsa Attack, Boris Johnson's silence over Israeli regime violence is a disgrace. Stay tuned for the details, please. It's been less than a week since British Prime Minister Boris Johnson ordered two patrol vessels to the Channel Islands port of St. Helier in an escalation of tensions with France. Amid front-page banner headlines and media fanfare, government sources accused Paris of sinking Lord and Jersey's Nazi occupiers during the Second World War. According to a government source quoted by the Telegraph, at least when the Germans invaded, they kept the lights on. Welcome to what passes for foreign policy in Johnson's Britain. Compare and contrast this with the British Prime Minister's reaction to the terrible events in Al-Quds over the past few days. The Israeli regime forces, firing rubber-coated metal bullets and dispensing tear gas, invaded Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the most sacred sites in Islam. Yet, the British Prime Minister had nothing to say. We have witnessed terrible scenes of Israeli regime police brutality, silence from the British Prime Minister. Overnight, at least 25 dead in Gaza, including 9 children. More silence, horrifying scenes of racist chanting against Palestinians by Israelis at the Western Wall. Just silence. Admittedly, it's been a busy few days for Johnson in the wake of British elections, but election pressures did not stop Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon from issuing a statement recently that attacking Al-Aqsa was utterly indefensible and a violation of international law. Labour leader Keir Starmer, better late than never, added his voice. He said, "The violence against worshippers during Ramadan at the Al-Aqsa Mosque was shocking," he tweeted. "The Zionist regime must respect international law. still nothing from Boris Johnson. We are witnessing what could become the most dangerous crisis in the West Asia-North Africa region for years, yet there has been no serious response from the Johnson government and, inexcusably, nothing from the Prime Minister himself. Britain remains a member of the UN Security Council, while only 2 months ago, Johnson published his Integrated Defense and Security Strategy, which claimed to set out a vision for a global Britain. It asserted the British dedication to the values of democracy and a commitment to universal human rights, the rule of law, freedom of speech and faith, and equality. To the point of tedium, the British Foreign Office reiterates its dedication to global human rights. But remember this, Britain did more than any other country to bring into existence the regime of Israel. The Balfour Declaration in 1917 not only promised to deliver a homeland for the Jews, but also pledged that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. After a week of Israeli regime police brutality in which Al-Aqsa Mosque has been raided 3 times, that promise lies in ruins. Why the silence? Part of the answer lies in the yawning gap that has opened up between British Foreign Office advice and Tory government policy. Philip Hall, the British Consul General in Al-Quds, is well aware of and condemns the demolitions and forced evictions in occupied East Al-Quds, which are the root cause of the weekend's horrific events. Indeed, the consulate published a video showing Hall speaking to residents in Sheikh Jarrah. The UK position on this is clear, Hall said. East Al-Quds is occupied and it's been illegally annexed. The restitution and planning laws here and their implementation are unfair, and they breach Israel's obligations as an occupying power. Yet Rob has unforgivably failed to spell this out. We're not talking, as Israel disingenuously claims, of a real estate dispute. We are talking about forcible evictions are part of a state-sanctioned policy to change the demographic character of occupied East Jerusalem, which includes settlements and demolitions. It is not a tedious real estate dispute, but a struggle for a future Palestinian presence in the city. Rob shamefully waited until the Hamas reprisals before making a statement, and then he confined himself to a feeble call for both sides to de-escalate. The Tories have not always been afraid to criticize the Israeli regime. In 2006, William Hague, then the shadow Foreign Secretary, used the term disproportionate about the Israeli regime invasion of Lebanon. His remarks were followed by protest and an alleged threat to withdraw Tory funding from Lord Combs, an important donor and member of Conservative Friends of Israel. To the best of knowledge, no senior Tory has ever used that phrase again. It is time they did. Disproportionate is not a strong enough word to describe the Zionist regime actions in recent days. But it's time for the British Prime Minister to speak out loudly against the moral horrors of Israeli regime policy in occupied East Al-Quds and beyond, and not just to urge justice for beleaguered Palestinians. the light.
Looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers? Chip may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Using an unusual array of tools for a haircut, that's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blow torches, knee cleavers, and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. His style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, we must try this, we should try this.
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots. It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the Lock's boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location. A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
People around the world dream of having special weddings, but these couples in Russia have made their wishes come true. 30 couples in Moscow have gotten married on cable car cabins, hoping to set a world record. The sweethearts exchanged vows mid-air with a picturesque view of rainy Moscow. If the attempt to set a record is verified and confirmed, it will go to the Guinness Book of World Records. The wedding ceremony in Russia has turned into an extraordinary one as it was celebrated on a 720-meter-long cable car. 30 Russian couples tied the knot in the moving cable car cabins on Saturday. Even rainy weather in Moscow didn't stop them. The newlyweds said they wanted to make their already special day as unusual as possible. They also hoped that their mass wedding would set a Guinness World Record. The remains of 9 Neanderthals have been found near the Italian capital, Rome. Archaeologists believe the oldest one is dated to around 100,000 years ago. The other 8 remains are dated between 50,000 and 68,000 years ago. Researchers unearthed the fossil fragments in the Guattari prehistoric cave, or caves I should say, near Rome. Neanderthals are the closest ancient relatives of humans. They died out about 40,000 years ago. Some theories say they died because of their inability to adapt to climate change.
1,000 drones have lit up the sky of a northwestern Russian town in a dazzling show commemorating the country's victory in World War II. The drones flew in formation and displayed images related to the deadliest war in history. The show ended with a giant dove of peace flying above mesmerized spectators. Russia commemorates its Victory Day on May the 9th every year. There is also an annual parade which the authorities decided to postpone due to the coronavirus pandemic. Humans have used the services of honeybees for centuries. Now, Dutch scientists have found a way to get help from these small animals in detecting the coronavirus. Let's have a listen.
We take the bees from a honeybee keeper here in the region, and we use a set of bees every day, and we put those bees in harnesses to fix them. And then we present coronavirus positive and coronavirus negative samples. And after presenting a positive sample, we always present sugar water afterwards. So in the end, the bees extend their proboscis after being presented a coronavirus positive sample. And in that way, we can train bees pretty quickly.
The bees indicate a positive COVID-19 result by extending their tongue to drink a reward of sugar water. Using these insects as coronavirus testing tools can significantly shorten the time spent on waiting for the result of a COVID diagnosis. It can also be very important in countries where there is not enough infrastructure and testing. Bees have an unusually strong sense of smell. They have already been used in some parts of the world to detect explosives.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A recently installed pizza-making machine is pitting itself against masterful chefs in the Italian capital, Rome. The tall red machine has become a head-turner in the city, which is famous for its pizza, one of Italy's most iconic traditional dishes. The customers get to choose amongst four types of pizzas plus a drink. A few minutes after placing your order, you will receive a dish on a platter fresh out of the oven. But Italians say the pizza can't compete with those made traditionally.
The true pizza is made from a wood oven. I wouldn't even take into consideration eating a pizza from a machine.
So far, the reception from people has been far from favorable. However, some say the final product can be acceptable considering its price or if you're in a hurry.
As many countries accelerate their coronavirus vaccination programs, life is gradually getting back to normal. Now, residents of a nursing home in the Spanish capital, Madrid, finally get a chance to go out after months of isolation. Around 50 elderly residents and staff from two care homes went on an excursion to the Madrid Zoo after they were vaccinated against COVID-19. They visited some of the park's inhabitants, from pandas to elephants, while sitting on a miniature train. They hailed the idea, saying they were bored with staying at the nursing home with no visitors.
It's good to leave, to break the monotony of the nursing home, especially as we have been confined there for so long. It's nice to get outside, so I decided to go out and see the world.
The director of the care home believes the experience makes the residents forget about their pains. Around 43,000 seniors died of COVID-19 during the first wave of the pandemic in Spain. The elderly population was among the first group to receive coronavirus vaccines in the country.
A Over the past few years, people have become more aware of the detrimental effect of littering to the environment. Bolivians have launched a nationwide campaign aimed at protecting the country's scenic spots and waterways from human waste. Hundreds of volunteers were seen cleaning up the Valley of the Souls near La Paz, which is famous for its unusual razor-sharp rock formations. The volunteers, aided by heavy machinery, managed to collect over 15 tons of plastic waste and construction rubble from the rocky canyon. Activist Carola says people needed to speak up more in defense of the nature, which is increasingly coming under threat.
It is incredible how we can find jewels like this painting amid all these piles of rubble and garbage, and we are surprised and ask, what is going on with nature? It is a tourist place where many people come. The Valley of the Souls is very special, and many people have gathered together here to be a voice for nature and to get it the care and respect it deserves.
Last month, the campaign also cleared the highland lake of Uru in western Bolivia, which is said to be full of more plastic than water. Campaigners say they will continue their efforts until no place with garbage is left in the country. An exhibition in the Belgian province of Walloon-Brabant has put on display several objects belonging to French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. A belt with the word Waterloo written on it, a flintlock pistol, Napoleon's shoe, bathtub, clothes, and several other objects are all displayed in the exhibition. Many of the items are brought from Napoleon's last residence on St. Helena Island. The curators say the exhibition aims to show Napoleon's daily life and the way he lived. Earlier this week, an auction was set up in France offering Napoleon's blood-stained cloth, estimated to be sold for $18,000. May 5th marks the 200th anniversary of Napoleon's death.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
A group of anti-war veterans said President Joe Biden's spending priorities indicate that he thinks preserving apartheid is more important than fighting climate change. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kenny Sansil Ryder. This article is published under the heading Biden Budget Would Send $1.3 billion more to Israeli regime military than to global climate programs, analysis shows. Please stay tuned for more. The Zionist regime continues its deadly assault on Palestinians throughout occupied territories. A new analysis released recently shows that if congressional lawmakers in the U.S. approved the federal budget unveiled last month by President Joe Biden, the nation would give $1.3 billion more to the Zionist regime military than to the global climate response. Although Biden has yet to release his official budget request for FY 2022, he shared a preview which was heavily criticized by progressives. In his analysis, Stephen Selmler, co-founder of the Security Policy Reform Institute, cited two excerpts from the White House's spending proposals. The discretionary request meets the climate emergency head-on, providing $2.5 billion for international climate programs and discretionary request fully funds U.S. commitments to key allies in the Middle East, including Israel. Semler explained, fully funds U.S. commitments to Israel includes giving the apartheid state $3.8 billion in annual military aid, $3.3 billion in base bilateral security assistance, plus another $500 million for missile defense systems. As outlined in the 10-year MOU the Obama-Biden administration reached with Israel in 2016. In response to the analysis, Left Flank Veterans, a group of anti-war veterans, said Biden's spending priorities indicate that the president thinks preserving apartheid is more important than fighting climate change. Semler wrote that per the Paris Accord and science, U.S. financial contributions to the global climate response should be orders of magnitude higher. Basav Sen, Climate Justice Project Director at the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS, recently told Common Dreams that Biden's pledge to cut U.S. greenhouse gas emissions in half by the end of this decade is far from enough, and encouraged the administration to commit to paying our fair share for climate mitigation and adaptation in Global South, calling current commitments woefully insufficient. This isn't charity, this is responsibility, he explained. As the world's largest cumulative greenhouse gas polluter, we owe this to Global South countries who are facing serious consequences of climate change, even though they have contributed so little to its causes, unquote. According to a recent analysis of Fair Share climate policies conducted by Friends of the Earth, ActionAid, and the Sunrise Movement, the U.S. should reduce its carbon pollution by 70% compared to 2005 levels by 2030, contribute at least $8 billion to the United Nations Green Climate Fund, and provide up to $3 trillion for green economic recovery and no-strings-attached debt relief in impoverished countries. Per international human rights law, Semler continued, U.S. military aid to Israel should be zero. 2 weeks ago, Human Rights Watch released a report based on over 2 years of research and documentation that says the Israeli regime's systematic oppression of Palestinians across occupied territories amounts to crimes of apartheid and persecution. Progressives in recent days have denounced the Biden administration for refusing to condemn the Israeli regime's deadly airstrikes in Gaza and for failing to hold the Israeli regime accountable after its security forces invaded the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to attack peaceful worshippers, which was part of a broader assault on Palestinians who are protesting settlers' attempts to expel Palestinians from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds. That Biden is prepared to fail so spectacularly on both mitigating the climate emergency and opposing potential war crimes warrants a unified response from the Congressional Progressive Caucus about what they plan to do once Biden drops his official budget request, Semler added. Lindsay Khashgarian, the program director of the National Priorities Project at IPS, told Common Dreams recently that the sum of $2.5 billion in international climate aid compared to more than $3 billion in military aid to a single country would be laughable if it weren't so dangerous. These are the budget priorities of the past, Kukurian added. There is an opportunity right now for the U.S. to put its money where its mouth is. Can we invest more to save the world than we invest in arming it? Can we value human rights enough that we restrict our dollars from subsidizing human rights abuses like the system of apartheid and forced evictions happening today in occupied Palestine?
In Saudi Arabia, women have recently been allowed to drive cars. As part of the Crown Prince's social reforms, or sweeping social reforms, as it's usually referred to, inside the kingdom. Yet the radius of these reforms has been exaggerated. The shocking case of Abdulrahman Al-Sadan, a 37-year-old aid worker with the Red Crescent, proves that the reforms in Saudi society hardly exceed window dressing. As a political satirist, Abdulrahman Al-Sadan would use a popular parody account to mock the Saudi government for a couple of years. Little did he know that Riyadh had already hired some agents inside Twitter to infiltrate into Saudi accounts. In 2018, Al-Sadan was identified and arrested and stood trial. Now, he has been sentenced to 20 years in prison plus 20 years more of travel ban.
I think that that what has happened reflects the insecurity of the regime, not insecurity from fear of, say, physical force or a military attack or something like that, but it reflects the fear that is there and inherent in the fragility of their egos, of the leadership's ego, and so they can't deal with any sort of criticism. And this is sort of a real common phenomenon with dictatorships across the world.
While Twitter has not revealed the identities of individuals who were possibly exposed in the infiltration, the connection between Sadan's arrest and the alleged breach in 2014 was first reported last year by Bloomberg. In addition to Sadan, human rights organizations said they have identified six Saudi citizens who've been arrested in connection with anonymous Twitter accounts they ran. This is Arij Al-Sadan on her brother's case.
My brother, unfortunately, was one of those targeted by the Twitter spies, or rather, you know, by the Saudi officials. Basically, he had an anonymous Twitter account, like many other Saudi people, and he was expressing his opinion. He was criticizing, you know, issues related to social justice, human rights. He wasn't actually that heavy in terms of his activism or even criticism. He didn't really have much interest in politics, but it was more of a personal expression. He just liked to express his opinion. And, you know, when you're actually following Twitter, especially in Saudi Arabia, it's easy for you to feel like you know, you can't stay silent and you want to talk, you want to express, and it's something normal. It's a